Hello, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I'm Carl from selfsufficienthub.com, and I'm here to talk about all things self-sufficiency, all things homesteading, and about how we can reduce the gap between our consumption and our production. Sustainability and food security matters.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. Wow, guys, I'm so sorry. This episode is going out a day late, and depending on how you see the world, it may well be considered a dollar short as well. This is going to be another From the Vault episode, another re-release. We're going to be going back to episode 95, over 200 episodes ago, with my interview with Maggie Carr, where we spoke about seed sovereignty and seed saving. So I think it's well worth a listen. It was back in 2020, nearly 2 years ago. And as I say, I think well worth a revisit. My apologies to all of you, because there has just been no opportunity at all for me to do any recording this week. I'm recording this little intro segment from the Builders Merchants car park in my car, because I figured sooner late than never, and sooner in the car outside the Builders Merchants then not at all. So please forgive me. I promise we'll be back to our regular schedule next week, which brings me to the tiny thing I wanted to mention, is that Friday's episode will almost certainly be a re-release as well. I do apologise, guys, genuinely, and I always feel terrible when I can't get a podcast out when it's expected, but, you know, sometimes life gets in the way, and it's been an incredibly, incredibly busy little period for me, with organising the house, organising the animals and everything else. It's just been very, very difficult. So here we go. It's a re-release, and I'll leave you with my conversation with Maggie Carr from episode 97, I believe. Speak to you soon. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 95 of Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I hope you're all safe and well. Today we're talking with Maggie Carr. Now, Maggie Carr is a long-time organic gardener with a lot of experience in both organic gardening and also saving seeds. And seed saving is going to be the topic of today's conversation. We touch on many, many things. We give you some really simple seed saving tips, some really useful, actionable pieces of information that you can take away. I certainly learned a thing or two from this interview, as will become clear when you listen to it. She also talks in some depth and with some passion about something that had never occurred to me before, and that is the topic of seed sovereignty. So I hope that you find this informational, I hope you find it interesting, and I will be speaking to you again on Friday.
So I'd like to welcome Maggie to the show. Maggie, thank you for coming on.
You're very welcome. It's nice to be with you.
Well, perhaps we should start by you just telling our listeners a little bit about yourself and what it is you're doing.
Okay. Well, I'm an organic gardener. I've been an organic gardener for 45 years or so. I've lived in the house I'm living in with the garden I've got here for the last 23 years. I live in South Wales. And have a steeply sloping garden with a reasonable sized vegetable garden. It's a fairly large garden. It's about a third of an acre. About a sixth of that is vegetable garden. So you can see it's not a huge vegetable garden, but I live out of that veg.
Yeah, no, it sounds good. When you say you've got a sloping garden, the first thing that comes into my mind is it a south facing slope?
It is a south-facing slope. Aren't I lucky?
You are. You are. you could have ended up on the other side of that hill. So
I wouldn't have bought a house on the other side of the hill. I'm sorry.
So how did you come to be growing all of your own vegetables? Is that something you've always done?
No, it's not something I've always done. You know, we live a life, don't we? And so we do different things at different times in our lives. I've grown vegetables organically in some form or another since I was about 18, and so I have been growing organic vegetables for a very long time, But our lives kind of get in the way of what else we want to do. And there have been times when I've been too busy to do large amounts of vegetable gardening. But now I'm in a very sort of settled place, and I can do a good chunk of vegetable gardening. And therefore, I've got time to think about developing it further, and have been considering something called seed sovereignty, which is actually about not using F1 hybrids from the big seed companies, but saving your own seeds and keeping a wide diversity of seeds in a local area.
Okay, well, that is a nice segue into really the meat of what I wanted to discuss with you today. So how long have you been saving seeds for, Maggie?
I've been saving seeds for the last 10 years, and I started off just doing a few seeds. I started off with a variety which I was given, which is a black climbing bean called Cherokee Trail of Tears, so named because the Cherokee Indians planted it when they were thrown off their land and taken to reservations. As they left, they planted this all the way along. So should they ever be able to come back along that trail, there would be food for them. And so that's the name of the variety of seeds. And it's a very romantic little kind of bit of naming. I like to see a bit of history in things that I'm growing. And so I started saving those seeds, and I've been saving those for about 10 years now. And then slowly but surely, I've started to save more seeds. Every year I save another variety. And I started off with the easy ones, beans, dead easy, and I'm slowly moving into the more complicated ones, like some of the peppers and that sort of thing.
Okay, well, just to take a step back, there's a very evocative name for that plant, isn't it? It's very moving.
Yeah, indeed. And, many seeds that are historical seeds, so they're heritage varieties, actually have a history. Some were saved by one family, or some were grown in a village, or some were grown on a set of allotments, and so they have like a history to them,
which
makes them have a romanticism, if you like, as well as a practicality.
Absolutely. And I suppose that really gets down into the weeds insofar as what it is you're trying to achieve with one of your initiatives. When we're talking about seeds that have been grown over a period of time in the same space, then they're going to develop traits that are particularly suited to that environment, aren't they? Particularly if the more successful plants are selected.
Absolutely. And that's the whole point. You save the best seed from the best plants that you're growing. The best plants are obviously the ones that are most suitable to the conditions you have in your garden. And then you're slowly but surely changing the underlying genes in the seed in a very natural way, so that the seeds then become very, very specifically good for your particular space.
So talk to me about your project that you've got underway and how you're looking to encourage local seed saving in your area.
Okay, so I'm a member of quite a few local groups, as many of us are, So I work with a group called Incredible Edibles in Carmarthenshire. I work with Swansea Organic Gardens, and I work with permaculture groups. And so there are a number of people who are very interested in saving seeds. There's a real importance in saving seeds. In the world, there are three major seed companies who are also petrochemical companies. And there's one in Europe, one in America, and one in China. And they have a vested interest in selling you F1 hybrid seeds, which then need the chemicals, the fertilizers, the pesticides, the herbicides, which they also sell to support them, this growing. So we can all avoid these by not buying F1 hybrids and by using some of the smaller seed companies that do save their own seeds, open pollinated varieties. Then if we start to save those seeds as well, we're starting to add to the diversity of seeds that it's possible to grow. The main seed companies, the big seed companies, basically develop seeds for commercial purposes. So they all ripen at once, you know, peas, they all ripen in the field at one time.
Yeah.
The machines go in and they harvest everything. But of course, gardeners want something slightly different from that. Gardeners want something that actually ripens over a period of time so that they don't have just one single glut, but they actually have fresh veg for a period of time.
Yeah.
And so that's another very, very positive way of making sure that you use heritage varieties. It does give you that ability to have fresh fruit and veg over a period of time.
So I wonder then if we can spend a minute, if you like. I'll pull up my chair and I'll give you the blackboard marker, and we'll spend a minute just talking about some terminology, because there is some terminology around seed saving that I know can put a lot of people off. And even for myself, someone who spends a lot of time learning and teaching myself these kind of things, there's some, I'm not sure how to put it, but some terms that are almost used interchangeably. And it's very difficult to know really what people mean when they say things like heirloom or heritage and open pollinated, because these things are all used interchangeably. And perhaps they are exactly the same thing, and you could clear that up for me, and perhaps they're not. But when we're talking about heirloom, heritage, open pollinated and F1 varieties, perhaps you could spend a moment and just explain to me exactly what that means.
Sure. Heirloom varieties are varieties that have a history. So like the Cherokee Trail of Tears, for instance. Heritage varieties are the same, but they tend to come through a slightly more official channel. So the there is an organisation which has a heritage seed library. And so that term is particularly attached to the heritage seed library, but it is interchangeable, really, you know, those sure. two things. Open pollinated is what it says on the tin, you know. Basically, you don't, it is just the plants which are grown near to each other that pollinate each other. F1 hybrids are grown specifically by big seed companies. They are two different varieties which are then grown together. They're pollinated together. Sorry, they're pollinated together so that one pollinates another. And you then end up with a different variety. Okay. Now that variety is only true in 1 year, because that the way that the plants are crossed means that the genes that they have in the seed are very mixed. And so when you try and save seeds from them, you get a bit of a reversion to the original seeds, plus a few other weird bits and pieces. So you have no idea what you're going to be growing if you save seeds from an F1 hybrid.
So looking at it as a sort of family tree then, an F1 hybrid, a seed that we would get from a packet of F1 hybrid seeds would be the culmination of maybe one or maybe more generations of growth, and they've culminated in this seed. And obviously their genetic makeup includes parts of all of their parentage and ancestors, and when they then go on to seed, we could get any mix from the above. Is that
that's it? So it's not a kind of seed that you can grow year after year after year. So it's not really worth saving. The only seeds that are worth saving are ones that are open pollinated.
Understood.
And then they will grow in the same form, will grow the following year.
Well, that brings me on to the next and hopefully the last question that I have in this sort of area, in the sort of getting your hands dirty with the knowledge side of it. And that is, some open pollinated plants, though, they won't grow true either, because they're going to cross pollinate with other things, aren't they?
That's true. And this is where we start to get into the nitty gritty of seed saving, really. So there are ways that you can ensure that things will grow true from seed. So just growing one variety and ensuring that your neighbours are not growing the same thing. So, for instance, I grow a variety of pea. It's a variety called Lord Leicester. It's a very tall variety of pea. It grows about 8 foot tall in my garden.
Right.
And it's open pollinated. Now, my next door neighbours don't grow peas. Okay. I have a field on one side, which is rewilding, and next door neighbours on the other side, they grow a couple of bits of veg, but no peas. Okay.
Okay.
Therefore, those peas can only pollinate with themselves. So the insects can only pollinate those peas with those peas. So they will breed true. Okay.
Yeah.
I grow beans. I grow two different sorts of beans, but one flowers and finishes flowering a lot earlier than the second variety. I start it a bit earlier. It actually flowers earlier in the year, and the second variety I start later, and that flowers later in the year. And so they're never flowering at the same time. So that allows me to save two different varieties of beans. There's other little tricks, like if you're growing more than one type of pepper, for instance, in a greenhouse, so you've got chilies and you've got sweet peppers, you can actually make a little pocket out of a bit of old stocking and cover the flower before it opens.
Okay.
And then you can actually pollinate it yourself.
Yes.
And then cover it again to make sure that the insects can't get at it. So that's another way that you can actually ensure that things breed true. But this is starting to get into the slightly more complex areas of seed saving and ensuring that things are pure. For beginners, start with a tomato. You know, you can't get easier than a tomato unless it's a currant variety or a potato leaf variety. Tomatoes do not cross with each other. So you can grow two or three different varieties in the same greenhouse and they won't cross with each other.
Wow.
And so you can just then save when the tomato's ripe, you can and wait till it's really ripe. Don't do it early. Wait till it's really ripe. Cut it open. Take the seeds, put them in a jar, put a bit of water in the jar, eat the rest of the tomato for your lunch, and then leave that jar for 3 days. Sort of giving it a bit of a swirl every day.
Yeah.
And it will start to rot the flesh that's there and leave the seeds behind. So you get a bit of a smelly kind of goo on the surface. Keep on stirring it for 3 days and then take the goo off and rinse the seeds and keep rinsing them until they come through clean. And then you can put them on a plate, a shiny plate, and just leave them to dry. Don't put them on paper, they'll stick to paper. But if you put them on a shiny plate, they just dry and you can just knock them off, you know, so that they would dry perfectly.
Yeah. Well, that's actually surprised me to a point. I was led to believe that tomatoes did actually cross-pollinate, so they're one of the ones that were more difficult. But you're saying that's not an issue at all?
No, not for the majority. For as I say, for currant tomatoes and for potato leaf tomatoes, that's not the case. Their flowers are a different shape.
But right.
The shape of most tomato flowers ensures that they actually pollinate themselves.
Okay, so you're saying each variety, if you like, will have a different shaped flower?
The flowers actually are shaped in such a way that they can only pollinate themselves. Nothing else can pollinate them.
Oh, I see. Oh, well, I'm absolutely thrilled by that. we've saved several tomato seeds, but I've always done them as just, you know, we'll just see what happens. I don't actually label the tomato seeds that I save because I just assume they're going to be some hybridization of all the different tomato plants we've got. But I'll have to take a lot more care from here on out going forward, because we do plant some packet seed tomatoes every year. So I will have to start looking after those a bit more. We grow Outdoor Girl, which is probably a variety you're familiar with, being an heirloom. And I just always assumed that the seeds wouldn't be growing true. So I will definitely take a bit more care with those from now on. After tomatoes, what else have we got on our list of easy seed saving?
Well, As long as you've only got one sort of brassica flowering at any one time, the brassicas are a great little number. Now, I've just grown a new variety this year that I've never grown before. It's always worth experimenting. This is a variety from a great little company called Real Seeds, which are a Welsh company.
Yeah.
And they grow all their own seeds. And so they're all open pollinated. And they're all also open source. And that's they guarantee that any seeds that they grow will be, you can use them to let other people grow them. But you can't in any way stop other people using them. So it's a sort of like a little promise that you make. If you buy their seeds, you promise that you will actually, if you save them, you'll give them to other people. You can sell them to other people, but you can't actually restrict their use. They can do whatever they want with them as well.
Just like open source software.
Yeah. That's just exactly the same. Yeah.
Excellent.
So I bought from this company, Real Seeds. I bought something called Aztec Broccoli. Now, I've never grown this before, and what a brilliant veg that is. I've been eating it all summer.
Wow.
You can eat the leaves, you eat the little flowers, and it's now going to seed. And as I say, I've been eating it daily all summer. Gorgeous veg, holds its structure, really nice to eat, lovely flavour. I will never bother with spinach, summer spinach again. You know, doesn't get eaten by anything. It's completely fantastic. Just a great, absolutely solid veg. So that's going to seed now. And I will be saving the seeds of that as well, because at the moment, I have no other brassicas in my garden in flower.
OK. And of course, just again, going back a little bit, when you were talking about beans and how you have one variety that flowers earlier than another, of course, we can still, so long as we're mindful of what we're doing, we can have some overlap, can't we, in the flowering time, so long as we're saving the beans that were forming before the second plant came
that's
into flower.
Right,
and then
right.
We don't save the beans from the second plant until the first plant has stopped flowering, and then we've allowed a couple of weeks sort of thing.
That's absolutely the case. And it means that the seeds that you save the seeds from the earliest pods, and then you eat the seeds from the other pods, you know, because you're growing a crop. So you actually want to eat it as well, you know.
Yeah, of course.
So you can eat the later ones, but you save the seeds from the earlier ones because you know they're the ones that are pure.
And are there any other plants, just while we're on the subject, we were talking about tomatoes, are there any other plants that we can be far more cavalier about what else is flowering?
Well, I think that, you know, mostly we need to be a little bit careful, you know, we need to be aware. And there are all sorts of tricks and things, again, where you can control this. So, for instance, you can make an isolation cage, okay? So that if you're growing, this really is suitable for things that you grow in that flower in the second year. So, for instance, carrots.
Yeah.
In the first year, you grow carrots. And all the energy is put into the root, into the carrot.
Yeah.
And that's what you eat. But the following year, you can actually take, say, 10 or so, 15 carrots and plant them in your anywhere in your garden, you know, anywhere. And then make a little cage that goes round them and cover the cage with very, very, very fine mesh. I use voile. And that's a really fine mesh which stops any insects getting in.
Okay? Yeah.
Because I live in the country, there is wild carrots around me all the you know, everywhere.
Yeah, I've
so
got them
no
as well.
So there's no way that I can, even if there's nobody else growing carrots, I still can't isolate from carrots, from wild carrots. So I make this little cage and I cover all the way around, making sure that it's completely sealed to the ground. Then the carrots can flower inside this cage, and then they'll self-pollinate, wind pollinate inside the cage, and then I can save the seeds. But you need to save at least 10 roots to make sure that they cross-pollinate.
Okay. But they're not something that actually requires a bug to pollinate them, are they? They can be pollinated.
No, they can be wind pollinated, but the bugs will actually then bring, and maybe the wind as well, will bring the pollen from elsewhere. So that's why you make the little isolation cage.
Yeah, I wonder, could you use something like a cheesecloth?
No, it's too coarse. You need something really, really fine. A voile would be, is I find, ideal. So that's a very, very, very fine netting.
Hi guys, I'm just very quickly interrupting the show to say please consider supporting it. If you'd like to consider supporting this one-man operation, there's lots of ways you can do it. One of the easiest of which is just to talk about it, to share it online, on your social media pages or with friends. By growing this audience is one of the best ways that we can actually ensure that the show is sustainable. If you'd like to support it more directly, then please consider becoming a patron. You can do so by going to patreon.com/self-sufficient hub. By becoming a patron, you help me to achieve things that I'd love to be able to do in the future, such as buying better equipment to increase the quality, allowing me to pay myself some time to spend on the podcast, again increasing the quality of it, and also paying for things like transcription and show notes. If you would like to do that, please do consider going to patreon.com/self-sufficient hub. Thank you. Everything you do to support this show is really appreciated. Beyond the benefits of not having to purchase seeds every year, there are actually some other benefits available to us, aren't there, over time?
There are indeed. And one of the best benefits is actually to share this, you know, not to do it on your own. We are not islands, you know, we are part of a community. And therefore, I am in the process of setting up a seed library. And this is a local seed library. And it's a bit like a regular library. You can go along, you can borrow a packet of seeds, you can plant them, you can grow them, then you can save seeds and then return them to the library.
Yeah, so that's, I love that idea.
Sort of notion of a seed library. We're just setting it up at the moment. We're setting it up this year. And there are a number of people who are very interested who have actually... who are already in the process of saving a few seeds. And we're talking about sharing those seeds that we've got this year. And then next year, I'm going to put a training program in place to really help and support people to understand and to be able to save their own seeds in a secure fashion. And then we will set up the official seed at the end of next year. So we're starting by just a little sharing and a training program, and then we'll be moving on. So we've got our very first meeting. We're actually having a meeting. Loads and loads of people have been showing their interest. So we're going to have a Zoom meeting this Saturday coming to ensure that everybody has the opportunity to have their say. Anybody who wants to can have a say. This is a community organisation and therefore needs to be, you know, some support. The community needs to have a chance to have their say. This is not my seed library, it's our seed library. And so we need to set it up in that way.
But even though it's not yours, these things always do require someone to act as the catalyst, though, don't they? Even though the desire may be there in communities, it does take someone to say, okay, everyone, let's do this. And I think that it's excellent that you're doing that in your community, and I would encourage others to be that catalyst in their own community, because it does require a first mover to get that ball rolling, doesn't it?
It does, it does. And I have to say that I'm quite happy to be doing this, because it is something that I do have great concerns over, seed sovereignty. You know, we live in a hugely commercial society. And of course, you know, big business is big business. They want to take your money they don't care about diversity. They don't care about things which are suitable for your particular area. They don't care about gardeners. You know, we're a very small little fish in the national and international game. And so it's really important that we as individuals stand up and say, oh, hang on a minute, let's do it differently. Yeah. So I'm quite happy to be one of those people that stands up and says that. But I really want to ensure that everyone has their chance to have a say.
And What are the other things when you say the words seed sovereignty? I can hear the passion in your voice. What is it about seed sovereignty that you feel is so important?
I think it's absolutely fundamental that we as human beings have the right to save and grow seeds. And big business would like to take that right away from us. I think that seed sovereignty, idea of open pollinated seeds, seeds which grow very well in a particular area, seeds which have a history in an area, it's a really important thing, which big business has been trying to destroy for many, many years. And so this is a little kind of, you know, no, sorry, not playing that game. Let's play a different game.
Good for you. Good for you. So where would you like to direct people to find out a little bit more online? If I know that you're not up and running yet, but is there something that people should look out for? I know that I have listeners in Wales. Is there anything in particular you would either direct people to now or in the future?
Sure. It depends where you are in Wales. There is already a seed library in Lampeter. And so that's a good place if you're in West Wales. If you're in South Wales, then why don't you go to the Swansea Organic Gardeners, and there you find me, Maggie Carr, and I'm on that page. I'm one of the people on that page. Leave a message there, and we can tie you in. At the moment, of course, we haven't actually got our own Facebook page for a seed library or anything like that because we haven't started yet. Whereas this Saturday is when we're starting, so it's all quite new. And we've also been making links with an organisation in Swansea, which is also talking about setting up a seed library. So we're talking about maybe setting up in partnership with them. We don't want to set up as under one banner because we're in a slightly different place. And of course, one of the things that we don't want to do is just keep on increasing carbon footprints. So we want to have a local library, you know, somewhere fairly local, that people can get to rather than having to travel all the way into Swansea and back out again. So it's again, it's about building partnerships, sharing and making sure that we have the ability to save our seeds and share our seeds with other seed organisations.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Maggie, for sharing your time with me today and allowing me to share that with a wider audience. It's been a real eye-opener and an absolute pleasure to have had you on. And make sure you stay in touch. And if at any point in the future you would like some help with promotion or pushing people in the right direction, then please do reach out.
Thank you very much indeed. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
This episode of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast was brought to you by our patrons. You guys are awesome. If you'd like to support the show, there's lots of ways you can do it. The easiest of which is just to like and review it wherever you get our podcasts. You can also tell somebody about it, whether that's on social media or just face to face with a friend who you think might benefit from it. But however you support our podcast, we really, really appreciate it. If you'd like to become a patron, please consider doing so by going to patreon.com/self-sufficient hub. However you support the podcast, it's listeners like you that make all of this possible. Thank you ever so much for listening, and I'll speak to you really soon.